how the hell do you land big clients like Tony Robbins, Russell Brunson, Cardone Ventures? How do you do that?
The end game was to become the best in the info world, and we did it. The drawback of being in the industry that we're in is everything looks better than it actually is. Right now, we're on a very aggressive path of rolling up companies. We're actually looking at rolling up one of our biggest competitors. We're going to try and buy someone bigger than us by the end of this year. So my original dream as a kid, I always wanted to travel, and the dream for me was to be a pilot. The work-life balance cliche, in my personal opinion, actually doesn't exist.
The following is a conversation with Rohan Sheth, founder of GrowRev. He's been in the online marketing space for over 10 years. He's managed over $50 million in ad spend, and he's generated over $100 million in revenue for his clients. He's been featured in Forbes, Huffington Post, Entrepreneur with GrowRev, and I got him on the podcast. He's also the guy who's helped me tremendously on my own Instagram journey. We're about to hit 200,000 followers thanks to a quick conversation that I had with him about 2 years ago. So I got him on the podcast and I asked him a lot about how his brain works, how his business works, and you're going to profit from this now. So let's crack right into it. All right, Rohan, thanks for your time. How the hell do you land big clients like Tony Robbins, Russell Brunson, Cardone Ventures? How do you do that?
How do I got them as a client? Man, that's a crazy story. So I came before those clients became clients of mine. And this is like pre-COVID, we're going back a little bit. So like 2018, 2017-ish. The agency that I started was very focused on the event route. We only focused on events. We did all the big free-to-fee events all over Asia, all over Europe, all over Canada, in the United States. We were filling massive rooms for some of the big TV personalities, you know, and then, you know, COVID happens and events go to zero. And I was like, well, there goes my entire business. Mm-hmm. But I was like, okay, well, if we work in the event space, what we've kind of dabbled in the online webinar world and just kind of, you know, tested it out, but there's so many people already playing there. We're like, let them play in their own little world. We have our own blue ocean that we're fishing in. That it kind of disappeared. So I'm like, all right, well, who do I know? And then came to be that I knew the guys at the Dean Graziosi team. They needed some help with some Facebook related stuff, help them out. And I said, if I can help you out with kind of, you know, some of the issues that you're running into, I want a shot at running your traffic. And they're like, okay. And I'm like, how about this? I'll help you. Give me a shot running your traffic for 60 days. We won't charge you. If we beat your internal team, we want the entire ad account. And we did. And then eventually we ended up getting them as a client. And then one thing led to another. It was just like referral after referral after referral that just kind of started from that whole process. So long drawn out story. And that's kind of how it came to be.
Damn. I mean, look, how I would love for you to be super honest there. How much of that move of like, hey, let us do it for 60 days, how much of that was confidence versus how much of that was kind of like Hail Mary?
Most confidence is majority of the time. We're negotiating a very big deal right now, and I mean big deal. That will pretty much transition the entire trajectory of our company. And we're doing it with the exact same way and going in and saying, hey, let us go run your ad account for free. And if we beat the your current buyers, we want the entire budget. And this budget is north of $50 million a year in advertising. One client.
Let's go. I mean, that's such a cool thing in B2B. I mean, I see it in B2C as well a lot, but especially in B2B, this whole idea of like, just work yourself up, deliver awesome results to like a client, and then get referred. And it's just like all about like how well do you deliver? And then these people just refer you with that. You know what's funny? So one thing that I did in preparation to our quick conversation here is I checked out your Twitter. You're not really active on there anymore.
That's the one platform that I'm not active at all on. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's so funny that you mentioned Cardone Capital because you, like, I'm sharing my screen right now, like Rohan Sheth 2013. So that's like 11 years ago. You were like super like, hey, Greg Cardone, like my new mouse pad and all that stuff. It's so funny. Like you're quoting the 10X rule and all that jazz. And I mean, that must be really freaking mindfuck for you to be like, I was the guy who read the books and kind of tweeted at Cardone. And then you were the guy who worked with people like Cardone Capital and
Cardone Ventures. Like Cardone Ventures. Yeah. It's a bit of a mindfuck, to be honest. Even like looking at, like, you know, when I was dead, like thinking about even working with Tony Robbins and Dean Graziosi, like those two, and like having the testimonial from Dean as well that we've been given that's on our website. You know, I remember being even before that Twitter feed, like dead broke, took 2009, 2010, and just listening. Like, I downloaded Tony Robbins and stuff, or some friend of mine gave it to me, and I would just be driving around and just religiously listening to it, right? Just kind of getting it into my head. And then to today, be like, 10 years later, be like, yeah, we manage their advertising. Like, that was a pretty big mind fuck going into it for a bit. I remember going into even Dean Graziosi and watching Dean pitch on infomercials on TV, like late night, when I just had nothing to do. I'm like, this guy's got a fucking, this is a sales machine. And then to be sitting in his office 10 years later and, being referred business by him is a different world.
It's fucking crazy. I mean, it was similar, but on albeit a smaller scale for me with RSD back then, like, Resource Dynamics. I was just a fanboy from the block, from the small little Austrian village, and I was just watching all the videos. And then I remember this one day I flew from Vegas to Santa Monica, sitting next to Tyler, and I'm like, this is the guy I used to watch the videos, like, holy shit. And
That's
now
so
I'm like
crazy.
with him and shit. Like, it was so amazing. It's such a mind fuck. Now, when you look at your journey of working with the biggest people in the industry, is that something that you aimed for in the beginning of your journey, or was it more something like, hey, I did this, might as well aim for the next bigger thing, and you kind of worked yourself up?
Not necessarily aimed for it. I did have the end goal was obviously, Info was a division that I understood really well, just coming from the affiliate world. That's where I came and spent a decent amount of my early days in the internet marketing world. So I was like, all right, well, let's just go see what we could do in the info space. And it just happened to be, one of the things that we talked about with one of my other companies is having a clear end game. And the end game was to become the best in the info world. And we did it, right? And now we're transitioning in a very different direction, and we've got the exact same clear end game now. But even today, some of the opportunities that we get in that world is it's interesting because I would have never thought I'd be in that space, but grateful for having those opportunities now come to me.
Yeah. I mean, when you say you never thought it, you never thought you could ever be there, now you are there. Do you now have thoughts where you're also like, well, I could never make it, but hold on a second, that's what I thought earlier, so fuck it, let's go for that.
Yeah, all the time, dude. And the bigger you get, the bigger you get, the different challenges that come into play, right? So it's just like, also, is it, when you're small in a one man show, you're like, fuck, I can only, if I wish I could only get to like 100 grand a month in business income. And then you're like, huh, I did it. I wish I could get to a million. Huh, I did it. But then like the problems get bigger, the fucking challenges get bigger. Now you're dealing
Yeah.
with different mental games with yourself. So it's a different ballgame across the board. And just understand, like I said, making sure that you have a clear end game, like that's all it is. Where do you want? What do you want? We know where we want the end game for the agency to go to. Obviously, not with a couple of our other companies, but the agency will have a very clear end game in the next 24 to 36 months. We know the number we need to get to. It
Yeah.
doesn't matter if we go get the biggest guys or if we go get, 10 half decent guys.
That goal that you mentioned, is that the $100 million net worth, or is that connected to your personal $100 million net worth that you want to reach in 36 months?
By the age of 40, the goal is to get to 100, and then the bigger goal is to going to be have a decent exit within the next 36 months.
Damn. I mean, that's one of the things that I wanted to ask you too, is I have kind of like two camps of friends of mine. One camp is like, you don't ever aim to get an exit. Because especially when you build a personal brand, and the other people are like, the exit is the only thing you do it for. What is it for you? Because I feel like it's somehow still connected to you as a personal brand. How can you exit out of that if you have a personal brand that is connected to your face?
Well, if you look at my personal brand now compared to what it was before, my personal brand today is just more of like a dancing bear situation. It's like I don't even produce as much content as you think. We just have a very, very dialed team that does it for me. Even the personal brand that's going to get restarted probably in the middle of this year at some point, we're restructuring. We're coming in, funny enough, with a new company that we're launching with a partner of mine called Scale to Sale. And that entire methodology is going to be about scaling and exiting companies, which is everything that we've done internally here. And then Nick, who's my partner in our company, his entire background of doing over $6 billion in exits.
Sheesh.
So he's that he's a massive, massive. He comes from private equity. He works for private equity, so he's done a lot there. Now, the reason for us to even talk about exiting across the board is, the way I look at anything is everything's for sale, right? Everything at some point is for sale. Now, some of the, if you think about it, the amount of companies that last, on for decades and decades and decades gets dwindled and dwindled down to a point where, it comes to a point where it's like, you really are not, unless you're turning this into building. If I turn You never know. I could, 2 years from now, we could turn into something massive and I turn me grow Rev into this entire media property that just becomes bigger and bigger. But we've already had offers. We already have offers. So there's clearly attention there. We'd be stupid not to take it, have a capital event. And then from that point on, one, I'm not as stressed out all the time and being like, okay, what am I doing next? What am I doing next? At least now family's taken care of, legacy's taken care of, and then I can go build a real fun legacy company after that.
It's funny that you mentioned this whole idea is like with every decade there's less and less companies that go through that, and this concept of longevity and legacy has been on my mind very much so as well now the last year, because now I've had my current consulting business since 2019, and just in that time span now the last 5 years, like we've been close to extinction like multiple times. We've had to overcome like so much shit, like offer changes, market changes, black swan events, staff leaving, and so on and so forth. And I'm like, there's been so, just in these 5 years, there's been so many points in my time where I could have just let it go and just built something else, some hype AI bullshit, whatever, anything that sells easily. But I always kind of chose the hard path and say, no, I'd rather continue this and keep growing with that instead of just going down easy. But at the same time, I'm not sure if that's even the right thing to do. I would love to hear kind of your thoughts on that.
Oh, bro, I could write a fucking book on that whole last 5 years of just getting your ass handed to you.
Yeah.
So, but it the way I look at it is in two trains of thought, right? The one thing and the drawback of being in the industry that we're in is everything looks better than it actually is. What I mean by that is like if there's a reason to why people are bouncing from offer to offer, business to business is because they can't build one thing that's going to have long-term sustainability. One of the things that we talk about, and I've talked about this across the board, is being in the position that we were in for a very long time, where it's like we had behind the scenes to some of the biggest offers, right? When you're running traffic, now we come in, we get access to traffic, and then we start to look, and then we start getting access to sales, and you start getting conversations about operations and things going to play, and you're like, these guys aren't doing as good as they actually think they're doing, like, and then you started having those real conversations. But then even, I just spoke last week in Tampa at an event and I said, most of you guys, and it was all info marketers. And I said, most of you guys are within 12 to 24 months away from being essentially extinct. And the reason being is you build offers, you don't build businesses. Now, if you can reverse engineer a build, how to turn an offer into an actual business, you can turn that into a brand that can turn into an exitable outcome. And I broke down that entire place on, how info brands themselves can turn into an outcome where you can have an exit, but how you do it is understanding the three ways that the three parts that needs to be implemented in those. And when you look at that across the board, me and you chose a hard path. To us right now, it looks hard because we're feeding in this world of just fake marketers and a bunch of bullshit artists that are out there. Because all do exactly what they're doing for half the price, and then they fuck the bed and don't get the results, and then they come back to you, and now they're crying. But at the end of the day, if we just stay the path, at some point these guys are going to realize these guys are here to stay. They're serious, and no matter what actually happens, you can't beat longevity in anything. At the end of the day, consistency and longevity is going to beat long term. So just keep going through the hard shit. Like I said, I could write a book on. Get my ass handed to me over the last 5 years because I've had everything come at me at one time and still here.
I mean, first of all, thanks for saying that. That really confirms my thoughts over the last couple of months of this, like, stop jumping from easy to easy offer, because that also kind of like creates this false idea about business that, oh, it's supposed to be easy and it's supposed to sell itself. But once you really learn how to sell something that might not sell itself, that might be, something that needs explaining and so on and so forth, and you just sell it by sheer will, proper marketing, proper funnels and proper sales, then you got the skill set to just repeat it over and over again. Because I was the guy who sold
100%.
the easy hype thingy. Well, I was just there at the right time at the right spot, but now I'm the guy who kind of sells a thing that is not just built on hype, that is not just like sexy right now, and that we're still making tons of money. So I guess that confirms my suspicion there. Thanks for that in this regard.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had the I've known you since now, what, like I think 2 years or something like that, and I
Two or three
remember
years, yeah.
Robin
Yeah.
Bauman, our CMO, he connected us back in the days, and I want to give you quick props here as well at this point, because we hopped on a call, with you. We paid you a nice sum. You hopped on a call with us and you just went on a quick rant. I think it was a 30 or 60 minute call where you kind of broke down your Instagram growth strategy with paid shoutouts. And me and Robin, we're just like writing notes, like the entire thing. We were like basically live transcribing what you said. And then we just implemented that. And now my Instagram account is almost 200,000 followers. It's about to crack 200,000 followers. We're making multiple six figures just from Instagram alone. So big shout out to you. Thank you. And just because we did that one fucking call with you. So I appreciate that. And then you also, I remembered, and after that, I kind of looked at what you're doing and so on and so forth. And you really got fucked once by, I'm not going to go into detail because I'm not sure how much detail you are allowed to say, but you got really fucked by a very large company. How much can you tell us about that, if you can at all?
Well, I know this is going to get put onto the platform and fuck me, so we're not going to go directly talking about the name. Long story short, early stages, I was one of the very early first ones to on Instagram growing through shout outs and building. Like, it was shooting fish in a fucking barrel when I first started. And it blew up not only the agency, but also blew up the other company that I built that ended up essentially going sideways because of it. They took me down, 10 month battle, David and Goliath style battle. If people can visualize what that would look like, they could put two and two together. And then they came. I came back, and after taking them on with lawsuits and legal and everything else, came back, and I was completely the other way. The account was cooked. The account was completely cooked. Everything had to go sideways. But just went back and built in foundations again. Right, one of the things that we talk about all the time as well is like strengthen foundations and building the foundation. Getting back to this standpoint, like last 2 years, I've put in. Day in, day out with my team, making sure that we can get to the point. Even watching, people like you just come through and smash Instagram the way you have is just phenomenal to see. I'm just like, fuck, I wish I didn't go down the first time around. Where would I be? But it's just like, it is what it is. So yeah, it was that story is for more of an in-person conversation or a non-podcast recorded conversation.
For sure, man. Yeah, I still appreciate you talking about it. To change topics a little bit, how do you what's your hiring procedure like? How do you hire the best fucking people that then run the marketing campaigns at such a high level? We're doing a lot of hiring right now because we're expanding so much, so I'd love to have your take on that as well.
So I've learned that lesson very hard over the last 2 to 3 years as well. Learned a lot of lessons over the last 2 to 3 years, to be completely honest with you. And the reason being is because the company and the team that builds you to get from where you are, were to where you are is not the team and the company that's going to take you from where you are to where you want to go. Through that entire process, the one thing that you've got to understand and realize is you've got to burn. Essentially, the reason you look at forest fires is a perfect analogy, right? Why do forest fires happen? Why do the only way for pine cones to be burned is through a forest fire to set new forest so that new trees can grow, right? Because it's essentially old analogy. The reason they happen is because the place that they are, they can't grow anymore. You can't get any more luscious forest because of it. The business that you want cannot go any more luscious with the team that you have. Now, if you consider having the team that brought you to where you are and you aren't willing, they aren't willing to step up into the roles that you need them to be in, you need them to play in, you're never going to get there. The easiest way to do that is to find someone that's done it, built it, had the experience in it, that get them to come into your company. It may take you 3 to 6 months. It took me almost 8 months to find this person, come into your company, and then give them the keys and say, go. And you have to have full certain trust in that person that can turn your entire company around internally. Because if you're willing to do that, not only are you going to learn, your team's going to learn, and you're going to have a process of self-selection. Because the ones that weren't going to stand by you anyways are going to leave within 30 to 90 days.
So that one person that you got in, what kind of role did that person have? Was that
The
COO or just HR?
COO, yeah, no, COO. We brought him on as a very high-level COO. And we tried to do this 2 or 3 times over the last 2 years, and we just were like, oh, this person can do it. They've got some experience. Oh, this person can do it. They've got some experience. Both times we did it without until we got this person, they sold us fucking smoke and mirrors essentially, and learned a lot through the whole process. Obviously, who not to hire, learned that for sure. What to look for, and then we got very, very diligent, right? Even with the company that I was talking about that we're launching on the other side, on the exit side, I sat down with him and I'm like, hey, how does private equity hire? I want to know their playbook, right? What do they go? Because obviously they're willing to go as deep and as like as dirty as they need to, and he broke down the entire playbook. And I'm like, I'm executing this. Obviously, took out some bunch of bullshit that we don't need the private equity uses. And I'm like, I'm executing this. And we went through three rounds of recruiting, almost hired one guy. And then I'm like, on the last, like, when both the offer letter is about to go out, I'm just like, something doesn't feel right. I pulled the plug on it. I was like, nope, not doing this. Went again for another round and took us literally almost 8 or 9 months before we found the guy that we have today. And this guy's been in the industry for, north of 20 years, has been part of three massive exits in the agency space, turned around multiple companies. I'm like, here you go. And I literally, when he came here, and I'm like, here's the keys to the kingdom, have at it. I'm like, I'm not going to tell you what to do. If there's anything that I can help you with, I'm going to be here. And, we're almost 90 to 120 days into this relationship with him, and it's been so refreshing because not only has it been what he's done for the company, but I've learned personally so much just because I've removed my ego from it and been like, oh, I'm the founder, I own this fucking company. It's like, no, fuck off. Like, you're just founder, you own the company, but someone can do this better than you can.
Damn, damn. I have two clarification questions in regards to this. Number one, what is your role in that when the COO basically takes up most of the operational stuff? And then number two, what is kind of the compensation structure? I mean, you don't have to tell the exact numbers, but what is kind of the compensation structure? We're talking about it when you get a guy like that in. Do they get a cut from the exit? Do they get a cut from the recurring rev, or how does it look like?
Salary, obviously. They've got to pay their and a very, very decent one. To the point where right now I know on paper on salary, and I don't have a problem saying this because there's zero ego around it. He makes more than I make as the owner and the founder of the company. And that's the level of confidence you gotta have, right, in the company. So there's that. And then number two is, yeah, a small piece of the exit for sure. That was part of the negotiation. And we put that up front because we knew if we're going to attract someone at his level or at whatever level they need to be incentivized just outside of a salary and bonus structure. They need to be incentivized and they need to be able to part of the long-term vision. That's really what it came down to. And then my role, to answer your first part of the question, my role now is transitioning very aggressively and in the sense of, moving away as much from the day-to-day as possible, not going into the office as much. Doing more podcasts, which will be fun, probably in the next little bit. Launching my own podcast at some point this year, which will be fun. And just be focused 100% on growth. Like, that's all I want to do. That's what I know how to do. That's what, where I spend most of my days with my network and everything else. So, I'm heading to Europe next month and or to UK actually next month to speak and get back on stages and doing all that stuff, doing the dancing bear thing. And just finding your role. So for some people that might not be the role. For me, I enjoy it. I enjoy the networking. That's why I built the company so we can, take it and put more of a fucking rocket fuel onto this thing.
It's cool that you say this, finding your own role. That was also kind of like one thing that clicked for me the last year. I'm like, everybody has a primary, secondary, and tertiary skill. And my secondary and tertiary skills, I think, are very much around sales and leading and inspiring a team. But my primary skill is just content creation. Like, I love nothing more than sitting there for like 3 hours ranting to the camera, and the next thing, short form videos, just writing content all the time. Like, that makes me the happiest. And I think also I'm the best at that. And over the last couple of years, I was so much in the operation, so much in the weeds with scaling our sales team, that I completely didn't do anything with content. So my whole primary skill was just there, but it was not really used, was not utilized. So it really clicked when you said, like, oh, you love the networking part, and then you're gonna go back to that now that you have the COO that kind of does the other stuff. That's just like another a confirmation of like the things that I've been dwelling on over the last couple of months. It's really cool. How important would you say is that at each stage of entrepreneurship to leverage their primary skill? Because, for example, at your stage, it totally makes sense because you got the COO, he handles kind of the day-to-day biz. What about if someone's getting started from 0 to 10K a month, from 10K to 100K a month? How are we talking about in terms of balancing what you're really good at versus what you just got to fucking grind out and do?
You just gotta get you. There's a phase that you just gotta quit being a little bitch and just do shit. Like that's what I literally tell everybody, right? At the end of the day. Even when I first got started, before I brought anybody on, I was at what, $30,000 or $40,000 a month in revenue before I ever brought anybody in. I just did everything, sales, fucking fulfillment, running the ads, dealing with customers, like the whole nine yards. Really isn't that hard. Like, if you actually think about it, it's really not that hard. But the opposite side of it, you've also got to look at it from a bigger picture is, okay, at some point you're going to get to a point where you're going to realize, because you're going to end up in these peaks and valleys, right? Eventually, Because it's where it's like you're gonna sell, then you're gonna go fulfill, then you're gonna go sell, then you're gonna go fulfill. But okay,
Yeah.
well, outside of selling fulfillment, what do you enjoy the most? And if you enjoy fulfilling and being the guy that's behind the scenes and doing the work because you know you can drive the best results, then do that, but then be and still have a face by putting out content and written content. But on the opposite side, what you probably should look at doing is having someone that thrives in the sales and then filling that role, right? So fill the role that is going to be your complete counterpart, counter opposite to what you enjoy doing, and then build through that entire thing.
Cool. I mean, similarly to that, also, you're kind of known to like buy and merge agencies. What's your process there? What do you look for when you want to buy and merge an agency? What are kind of red flags? And generally speaking, how do you get people to merge into your stuff?
Yeah, so right now we're on a very aggressive path of rolling up companies. We're actually looking at rolling up our one of our biggest competitors
Sick.
as we speak, and then we're gonna go for a bigger place. We're gonna try and buy someone bigger than us by the end of this year.
Damn.
So we're putting a lot of those pieces in play. Fortunately, we have the team and I have the partnership that can help that has done this at a very, very big level, right? So it's like I've got an unfair playbook, and I'll be very honest on that at saying that. But it's not as difficult as most people understand, right? We did a very small one last year to test the waters and see, okay, what are the learning lessons, and now let's go play big. The big thing is understanding, okay, what are you buying for? Are you buying for talent or are you buying for client? And those are the two usually the two main reasons you buy for when you're buying an agency or buying any company. For us right now, it's a multitude of things, right? We're looking for talent, we're looking for a client, we're looking for increase in our EBITDA because we know the quicker we can grow our EBITDA, the quicker we can get to our exit number within a short period of time. The plan we currently have, and I'll be very, very honest about this, the plan we currently have in place as of Monday of this week may have completely changed. And we're gonna, and next week, my entire exec team is flying into town. And we're gonna restructure this entire thing because what we thought we were gonna go for might end up becoming bigger just by accident. And that was just based on a call we had this Monday. So the way we're now looking at everything is okay, you know, we're not the biggest guys in the info space anymore by a stretch, by any means, because we just don't really put the time and effort there. But we are a very decent sized brand that can take on a lot. And this infrastructure. So we're like, okay, if that's the case, who can we go after? So now we're looking at anything that we can vertically integrate into the three or four different buckets. Info being one, direct to consumer, e-commerce being the other, professional services, home service being the other, and then sporting is the four buckets that we're going after. And we're just looking for, hey, do you want to continue running this thing yourself? You know, do the headache all day in, day out, try and compete against, you know, us, you, all the other agencies, or do you want to come under the umbrella and we can feed you consistent amount of business because we've got a pretty decent marketing engine out there now that's, you know, for lead flow and everything else that you'll never be able to touch us within the next 6 to 12 months. And you can just be the founder in your own little bucket that's under the entire brand. That's the way we're running into and doing it by just having blatant conversations and painting a vision that can be bigger than most people's can't vision and will see is how we're buying the agencies.
Sick. I mean, are there any red flags that you're looking out for?
Oh yeah. The red flags come through during due diligence though, man. The thing is like, it goes back to what I said earlier with the offers and especially in the agency space too. It's like, a lot of agencies play like they're bigger than they are. Like I was blatantly honest and said earlier, it's like we're not the biggest guys in the info space by means anymore. We're not. And most people are so attached to the ego of holding that, where it's like I couldn't give two flying fucks. Keep it. Like you want the badge, have it. I'm like, my vision is so different that I don't need to be the biggest guy in anything. I just want to have my own vision and run to that. And the biggest red flags is when they say they're the best at one thing. Well, you're not the best at that one thing because I guarantee you'll probably find someone that's probably just as good, if not better than you. And then on the opposite side of it, my answer to them is going to be, okay, well, let's get into due diligence. This is, you know, give me a number that you think you're worth or you want to be valued at. We'll have a look at it. We'll look at your due diligence, and then we'll get into the books and we'll get into the operations, and we'll see it's a complete fucking shit show. And then we'll probably not do the deal just because of that.
I mean, when you say you look at the books and the operations, what do you look for? Do you look at how much structure is there versus how much freestyle? Do you look at the KPIs if they have any? If so, how they're
Yeah,
sticking
it's
to
like
them
at the
or
end of
what?
the day, the books have got to be the tightest, right? Especially during and especially for us when we're because Let me put it this way. When we look at buying a company, and especially the way we're buying them right now, okay, if we buy the company, call it between 3 and 5 million bucks, right? We're paying for a company. At $3 and $5 million, we need to, within 24 to 36 months, that $3 to $5 million needs to, on the low end, pay us between $8 and $9 million, right? So it's like they have to have something there that we can double
Yeah.
within just by adding it on. That doesn't include all of the risks that we're taking on for, shit could hit the phantom or everything else. But like just based on the baseline numbers, we need to be able to double that amount in the next 24 to 36 months. Now, that being said, on the opposite side of that, when we get through that other the other part of it is, okay, how well are like where are they spending their money? What are they doing with it? Are they going out and blowing it every single weekend? Are they just taking and investing it into the team? Are they investing it into assets? Is there an investment strategy through it? There's multiple different things that you can look at. Are they just living it off of a lifestyle business? Because if it's a lifestyle business, it's worth nothing to me. Like at all, it's not worth anything to me. Because then I'm just buying people. And then at that point, if people already know that you're trying to sell, as soon as I say I'm not doing the deal, they're going to come knocking on their door anyways. So there's a few different ways of going through that entire process of understanding it. When even, one of the things that we do, and when we talk about it too, is understanding how to, scaling up, professionalizing it, and being also profiting up, getting clear for the exit really is going to be that part. And this, and we're actually teaching, I'm actually literally going to be teaching this in 2 weeks in LA with my partner on Scale to Sale, is the scaling up and understanding the profits, because there's people, and then there's also profit, and understanding how can you integrate the people part of that business. That's probably sometimes to me worth more than even the business itself. Because if I can get the right team member from another company that can see the vision, I know they'll bend over backwards because I'm just giving them a second opportunity versus letting them go. Because I could. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, but when you say like you wanna buy a company for the people, why don't you just hire the person without having to buy the company?
There's multiple facts on that part. Like I said, like if we don't do a deal, for example, and like we go through due diligence, we talk to the people because we interview a lot of the guys in the team, and hey, this is what we want to do. If we don't do the deal in the end, mostly like the people in that team be like, what happened to the buyout? I thought there was a buyout. What do you think is going to end up happening? Right? My LinkedIn reaches out, my email comes into play. And then obviously now it's like if we had a good relationship with them, the people may totally not realize what's actually going on inside the company. We also look at, and then even with contracts and customers, sometimes we'll do due diligence with customers and be like, hey, what's been your experience working with these guys? And we'll be blatant, like, we're looking at potentially purchasing these guys. So it's like soon you'll be working with us if this deal goes through. So there's that whole world too. It's, and then even with the people. And the business itself is two parts that I, or two things that I want to see. Like, are the people predictable? Are they repeatable? Are they doing their job exactly the way they need to be doing? And are they scalable? And so the operations need to be the exact same way. So there's that whole thing that comes from it.
Quick interlude. This episode is sponsored by nobody, by you, the viewer. Thanks for viewing. Thanks for watching. Really appreciate that. I'm probably not going to have anything sponsored anytime soon unless I find something. So the only thing I really ask you here is to, number one, give us a 5-star rating, whether you're watching this on YouTube or you're listening to this on iTunes or Spotify. There's probably a thumbs up or a 5-star rating thingy. Please go ahead and do that. It really helps us reach more people, get more awesome people on the podcast here as well. And also, the second thing I'm asking you for is to share this episode or any other episode that you find useful. Share it with a friend, your mom, someone on the internet. If you profit from this, if you learn at least one new thing, share it with someone. Share the good vibes, share the knowledge. Let's all be a part of an awesome upward spiral of success here. And as the mosquitoes are biting me, let's crack right back into the episode. When you're hiring A players, what, out of your experience, because I'm sure your company's full of them, what out of your experience, what are kind of like the driving factors that makes A players want to work with you as opposed to others, apart from the obvious ones such as better pay, more money?
Yeah, when I'm hiring A players, like even when I hire a COO, right? One of the first things that I have, and across the board with any of my executive team, I have one rule is that you can't have an ego. Like you cannot have an ego. And the reason being is an ego will fucking kill you. And I learned that the hard way. And coming from someone that went through that, I learned that, don't have no problem owning it specifically in that world. is if you have an ego, you're not going to last. And the reason being is because I'm not going to enjoy working with you, right? If you fuck up, own it. If we win, we're going to own it. If we made a mistake, if it's across the board, I don't care what it comes down to. If we make a mistake with a client, with a team, we just want to be across that board. So I when hiring eight players, the one thing that I like even when I said to Sean to go back to the story, is when I said to him, I said, hey, I want to bring you on board, but I'm not here to bring you on board. Yes, I'm here to bring you on board for a role, but I'm here to bring you on board so that I can learn from you. Right? I will be a fucking sponge. You've been doing this for 20 years. I've been doing this for eight. Or less than eight, really, if you think about it. But it's like I've been doing this for for a short period of time. And even in the 90 days or so that he's been here, I've learned so much more from him than I ever thought. So it's like the pay is just a an amount that's gonna the company is gonna subsidize. Like, what are you gonna learn from them and what are they gonna learn from you? So if there's a fair exchange and relationship there, you're gonna have a bigger outcome from it.
Yeah, man, that's a good point. When you look at your company, what I'm trying to do with my company at this stage is I kind of feel like my company's always grown, and then it kind of had to be cleansed by the non-A players, and then you grow again. So it's like you hire 10 new people, then whatever, three of them end up being A players, seven get cleansed, and you hire 10 more, and so on and so forth. So I feel like this, for me, it's been kind of like this cycle all the time. And what I'm really wondering is, for companies of your size, how many of the people in there are A players? Are they all A players, or do you have like kind of less important positions where you're like, whatever, this is fine, it's good enough?
Yeah, no, we're going through a full cleanse right now. Full-blown
Okay.
cleanse. Over the last probably 4 or 5 months, we've been going through a massive cleanse. You got to go through that, man. Like, you're gonna go through that completely. So, like, even we had a meeting yesterday. So we just hired a new head of a department that came in that's flown into town to kind of be here with the team of the week. And we're restructuring that entire department. And the reason we're doing it is because the person that we hired for that a year and a half ago didn't, once again, smoke and mirrors, came in, played this game. Knew what he was talking about, but didn't perform at the level that we wanted him to. And then we had to replace him, go through a bunch of stuff. And the one thing about hiring that I can tell you is if you don't hire right the first time around, it fucking sucks. Not only in the fact of, oh man, I fucked up and hired the wrong person, but it can put you back, not only the time that you spent hiring them, but the time that you spent integrating them into the company. Now you got to double that. Right. Not only do you have to double that, now your team questions you because they're like, oh, does this guy even know what he's doing? So you have to build all of that trust again. So there's multiple facets when it comes to hiring. And when I say we've learned that the hard way, so no, we don't have eight players across the board. You need the machine. And there's nothing wrong with that at the end of the day, because there's some people that just love that and there's some people that don't. And even through a cleanse, like right now, there's one department just got cleansed. We're getting ready to cleanse another entire department. It's probably going to take us about 60 days to get through that. And then we'll be, in a place to, again, push as hard as we can, get it to a level, probably cleanse again, then gun again, and cleanse again. So it's just the same repeatable cycle.
Good to know. Good to know that's normal, the cleansing. All right. To kind of completely change the topic here, I'm not sure if you're allowed to answer that, but just by looking at what you've been doing on social media, could it be that you closed a Formula One deal in whatever extent somehow that you're involved in there?
It's not done yet. It's getting there.
Okay.
It's getting there. Let's put it that. It's not done yet. It's getting there.
Oh man,
Very close.
that
Very
is
close.
epic. I mean,
Yeah.
let me know. Let me know when you're allowed to talk
You're
about that,
done
because
for
I'd love
sure.
to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
We gotta go to a Formula One race together this year.
dude, I'm down. I'm down. I always go to one in Austria. Of course, it's only like an hour away from me, and it's fucking great. I've seen you being at multiple. So yeah, we're hyped for
I'll
China.
probably be at Spa this year.
Ooh,
Yeah, so because
it's not too far away.
we'll be at Tomorrowland, and then the next day after that is Spa. So I'm like, fuck, we're already there, may as well just go. So yeah, we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, that is one hell of a combination, man. That is one
Yeah.
hell of a combination. A whole other question is, so as far as I understood, is like you've done 3 years of courses for the pilot's license in 1 year, and you did all that while running, building companies and whatnot. Like, what's the damn secret behind that? Because I've started pilot's license in 2020 before COVID hit, and it was tough as hell. And then I just kind of put it on ice because, you know, COVID, I had to hustle through to make the company survive. But yeah, I would love to hear your secret behind that.
Well, my original dream as a kid was to, and you know, this painting that I got done was when my dad passed away, and part of it being Mickey's wearing pilot glasses.
All right.
So it's kind of what it is, because we came from a world of coming from the travel industry, right? We had a very large travel company and traveled all over the world till I was pretty much 11 years old before we moved to Canada. And I always wanted to travel, and the dream for me was to be a pilot. I remember my mom says this to me all the time, like, since I couldn't know what a job was, I would say I wanted to be a pilot. Nice. So when I got out of school and I, you know, finished school, I essentially dropped out, really. I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna go and do the pilot's course. And then it happened to be like around this time where it's like beautiful weather in Vancouver and all that stuff. And I was like, fuck it, let's go. And I just went as hard as I can. I remember being at school 12, 14, 15 hours a day, studying, doing whatever the fuck I needed to do, and just like trying to push as hard as I can. And then got to the end of it. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we have a job offer. This company's a job offer for you. And I was like, cool, this is sick. So then I took a look at the offer and I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. And it was just the most retarded number I'd ever seen, where just like, I was like, there's no way. I was making more money at McDonald's working during high school than this job offer. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing this. I love flying. I'm actually going back. I went yesterday, funny enough, to go, because I got to get eye surgery before I can go back flying again.
Oh, geez.
Because I fucked my eye up a couple of years ago. But I'm going to go back to start flying soon. I love it. It just spent like, even getting to travel as much as I do, for me, it's like the one place where it's just like I feel just at calm. Like, no one, if I don't want to, no one can get a hold of me, as long as I don't buy Wi-Fi, right? Like, it's just a place where I can think. And you know, you're flying, you can see completely this unobstructed views, and just makes you think so differently. So there's that part of it. But yeah, so, and then one of the things that I like to do in anything that I do is, like, when I start to study something, I go obsessive, like very fucking obsessive. And that came from pilots, that comes from marketing, that comes from personal development. It's like, I will spend hours, any minute that I can think that I can spend learning, I will spend learning that thing. But it's like, that's just like an obsessive switch of mine. And that's the reason why I was able to take a 3-year course and do it in a year and a half, essentially. It's like in half the time.
Damn. I hear this so many times, this idea about obsession. And I always thought something is wrong with me, because I was always super obsessed with, at first it was guitar, heavy metal, and then it was video games and all that jazz. And it's like a recurring theme, and everybody that has crushed it that I've talked to, they're always like, yeah, I get obsessed really easily. So it's cool to hear that it was kind of the same for you. Now, you also mentioned that, you know, you come from a family where entrepreneurship is very much in your DNA, almost like that. And this is a question I ask everyone. How much of entrepreneurship do you think is nurture versus nature?
I think it's a balance. I think it's a balance of 50-50, because you have to have it. And I think everybody has it inside of them. They just don't take the time to see it. And that's okay, because, and the reason why I say it's okay is because entrepreneurship is not for everybody. Like, you have to be almost psychotic to a certain level.
Yeah.
And psychotic at a level to get, like, even if you've read Elon Musk's new book, like, it fucking speaks for itself, right? Like, the guy is just a unit when it comes to entrepreneurship, and he's a definition of what it takes to be a true entrepreneur. If you look at it, you know, he's done some very questionable things to his process, but still, like, to get to what he's built at one time, wild. Even looking at it from, like, so I come from an entrepreneur family, across the board, but I would say my parents weren't very entrepreneurial. And the reason being is my dad and his brother started a company that was very, very large. My uncle had the risk profile of an entrepreneur, while my dad had the risk profile of just being the nurturer inside of a company. So they balanced, you know, they balanced the dynamics there. When we moved to Canada, my dad tried to do that and do it on his own, but he didn't have the entrepreneur bone to go out there and get it done. He did well enough to get it to get it, you know, stable, but nothing to the levels of what they built in India. Like, it was the largest travel agency, an airline at one point. Like, it was like, it was wild. But and you know, it's funny looking back at it. You look at it today, me and my brother run GrowRev mainly together. You know, I'm the one that's just full-blown high risk profile on one side, whereas, like, he's, you know, he's got that safety net inside of him. So it's like in an entrepreneurship, in it comes from nature and nurture. It's got to be a balance of both. And there's certain roles where he's got a high risk profile that I don't, and I play the opposite side of it. And in every, you know, the one thing that I've learned from one of my close mentors, like John DeMartini, is like everybody has that trait in them. It's how much are you willing to pull that trait out and go as hard as you want.
Damn. One thing I noticed a lot with you when I'm following is like you're also a family man. You go real hard on one end with entrepreneurship, but on the other hand, you also have your own family. One thing that I'm kind of scared of at this part of my life, I'm 33 now, I'm turning 34 soon, and I really want kids, but at the same time, I'm like, I kind of have the fear that. Because I'm still also want to go all in with the biz and just keep crushing for the next couple of years. I have a fear that that takes away from me being a good father and or vice versa. So I'd love to know how you're balancing that because I see you already nodding.
100%, dude. It's so like we've got a newborn right now, and even like being on this call, it's just like you can hear him screaming over there. But it's just like at the end of the day, you just kind of have to figure it out. I'll tell you right now, man, it's the most. What's the word I'm looking for? On one end, it's the most rewarding thing to do. On the opposite end, you also look at your life and you're like, why did I do this to myself? And in the in the exact same lens, right? It's kind of crazy. And the reason being is because you come from the world of building businesses and building stuff. And it's just like the mentality that you gotta have. And I look at it in a way where if you're gonna just not, if at some point you're gonna do it. Right, you're gonna do it now, and you got to choose your heart. And the way I look at it is like, okay, if I choose my heart now, is it going to be fun and easy later on, and or is it going to be fun or harder later on? Now, the hardest part, and then someone said this to me, and it fucking smote me right between my head about, you know, 6 or 8 months ago, and they said, isn't it interesting that as men or across the board, the ones that want to build businesses and build families at the exact same time. The phase in your life that you want to build a business and build a legacy is the exact same phase that you have to choose, or most people choose, to build a family. Two of the hardest fucking things at one time.
Ah, shit.
Right? And if you look at that, it's like usually your mid-30s, kind of both, you know, I'll be 35 in literally a month, and you're going to be 34 soon, so we're only a year apart.
Yeah.
And when he said that to me, and this guy's about to sell his company for $120 million in about 2 to 3 weeks coming up here, and I just saw him last week in Florida. And when he said that to me, and I'm like, God damn, he couldn't be speaking the fucking truth. And he went through it, right? He went through the exact same thing. He's a little bit older than us, but he's like, it was the hardest 4 to 5 years of his life earlier on, because it's like you feel like you're missing out, but then what are you missing out from? Right, because it's like then you're building this thing to give them everything and build a family. But now, when he exits and in about, you know, in a few weeks from now and signs the paperwork, he can be there and do whatever the fuck he wants. So,
I mean, in this regard, what kept you from why didn't you just wait and say, well, let's wait 2, 3, 4 more years till I got that exit in the bank?
well, then I also look at it from that future pace myself, right? When I'm like, okay, well, if you know, when they're 18, 19, 20, 21, and wanting to have the fun party years of their life, it's like, how old am I going to be?
Fuck.
Right? Like, yeah, like that's the one that got my head going. And I'm just like, okay, well, I didn't have the fortunate exact, like my dad passed away when, you know, he passed away about 4 years ago now. And, you know, it throughout the last years, and even when I was younger, it's like we didn't have that relationship. So it's like having that opportunity to be able to give them the stuff, the lifestyle, and be able to go out and, hey, you know, let's go and fucking smash some beers and have some fun. Like, I want to be able to still do that, take them golfing, do all the fun stuff that I enjoy doing. Even my daughter too. It's like having those outcomes. If I did it later on, who knows, would I be around? Like, who knows? Like, obviously there's so many, like, with technology is changing so fast, but it's like that was also kind of in the back of my head, like, okay, well, I don't want to be too old and have kids, because then there's also a point where it's like I have a really close friend in our industry, and I was having this conversation with him in New York last month, and I'm like, what happened? Like, you were, you know, down this path of marrying, getting engaged, all this stuff, and kind of called quits, and you wanted kids, and I'm rehab saying you want kids, and he's just like, well, you get to a point where you get too old and you realize, like, what's the fucking point? And I go, Then now you're like, and then you start watching it from their eyes, and you're like, okay, well, you start to be in your like early 40s, and you're like, fuck, I should have just had kids earlier on. And then you just turn into an absolute fucking degenerate, and you're like, maybe that's a different, maybe those, even though it looks easier, but it's an easy because it's just a band-aid that he's putting on the outside to make it look easier.
Damn. Damn. I know you got to go in a bit, but how do you define a supportive family? Is it kind of like your family's just kind of letting you do your thing, or are they more involved? I mean, apart from your brother who's involved and more talking about your spouse and your kids.
That's a very loaded question. And the reason why I say it's a very loaded question is because, you've got to have a balance of if one person's focused on family, the other person has to be fully focused on legacy. And especially our work, right? Like whichever way you want to call it. Because, the work-life balance cliche, in my personal opinion, actually doesn't exist. Because when I'm working, I'm fucking working. Like I was in people like look at my travel schedule sometimes, they're like, how the fuck do you do it? And like you just have to do it. Like you don't have a choice, right? Flying retarded hours, speaking, doing networking, sleeping 2 to 3 hours a night, 4 hours a night maximum for 3 days, coming back and then bam, you're right back into this. Right? Like you don't have an off switch. So that's why the work-life balance just doesn't exist. And the way I look at it is you have to have it in a balanced perspective of either both of you are sacrificing something. Which one are you choosing? Does that make sense?
Yeah,
One is
and then
sacrificing on the work side to go as hard as they possibly can to give it everything they've got to go. The other person has to be willing to sacrifice in the family.
yeah.
And if you don't have that in balance, even though it's not balanced, really, but if you don't have that in balance, you're not going to be able to make it work. Because if you're going to try and put 50-50 here and they're going to try and put 50-50 here, you're not fucking putting 100% in anything.
Yeah, and now you're fucked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. I mean, you mentioned your daughter. She comes up to you in whatever, 10, 15, 20 years, and she says, "Hey, Dad, I want to be an entrepreneur." What do you do? What do you tell her?
Go do it. That's gonna be really what it's gonna be. Obviously, my one thing is going to be she's going to have access. Like even if I just turn this camera around, like the amount of books that I have, we're just in this room, not counting in the room behind me or my office. That's 20 minutes from where I am. It's just gonna be like you really want to be an entrepreneur? Like, grab every one of these fucking books and read them over the next 12 months. Get this right before you start figuring that out, but. I'm not going to tell them not to do it. And the reason being is it teaches you to be a stronger fucking human being and anything can come at you. Like we talked about the story of me getting fucked or like a few years ago by one of the biggest companies. Dude, I remember the day I got that. I thought my life was going to be done, right? Like you just literally look at yourself in the mirror and go, how am I going to get out of this? But you do somehow, some way, eventually you figure it out and you get out of it. And once you come out the other side of it, you're like, if I can survive this, I could survive anything. And then now there's a new level of challenge, right? And then the way I look at it is like that whole like if this was my base before, going through that battle made my base even higher, right? So it's like your foundation now is here. Now going through the next level of challenge, it continually pushes you. So if someone's struggling down here, you just look at their problem and be like, oh, I could fix that in 2 seconds, right? Like just the way you look at it. And the reason being is that's the one thing about entrepreneurship that I could tell everybody is like, if you are willing to put yourself through that amount of stress and come out the other side and not have it faze you, you're built for it.
Bam. I would say these are beautiful wrap-up words here, my man. Last but not least, how can people contact you? How can people find you? Instagram, website, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, Instagram. I know my personal website I think is still down, but rebuilding it could be not. But anyway,
All
Instagram is
right.
probably the easiest. I'm the most active on Instagram, to be honest, right now. It's
Dope.
just Rohan underscore chef. That's my kind of play that just the social that I play on. I know everybody and their dog's been asking me to play on Twitter, and I'm just like, eventually, when I get some time, I will play on Twitter.
You gotta reactivate that 2013 account, man.
I will. I'll have to go back and bring that back to life. Yeah, and then kind of, one of the ones I'm taking on soon here is going to be LinkedIn, talking, just kind of sharing some of the stuff more in depth and strategies and everything else. That's going to be one that'll be coming through,
Sick.
over the next little bit. And, other than that, just reach out, DM, and looking forward to potentially doing part two of this at some point. I know we wanted to do a longer one. It's just hard for me to right now commit to 2 hour long chats around this stuff because, and they could get deep if we went 2 hours. I'll tell you
I
that
know.
right now.
I know. I'm looking forward to that, man. We'll catch up on that. Well, thanks so much
Well,
for.
I'll be in the UK. I'll be in the UK more than likely next month. If you're around, I'm coming to speak at an event there
Well, it's
in the
only
middle
a
of May.
2 3 hour flight, so depending on I'll be in Finland, so it's literally just a 2 3 hour flight, so I can definitely make it happen actually.
Let's sort it out. Maybe we'll do an in-person part two.
Yeah, I'm down. Let's do it,
Let's
man.
do it.
Well, thanks a
So.
lot for your time. I'm gonna let you go now, and yeah, go crush, go. I mean, I know you will, so
Yeah.
just enjoy the ride, man.
Awesome, man. It was cool watching the sunset behind you too, doing this entire thing.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it was
that was
pretty
pretty
epic,
sick.
man. Pretty
Yeah.
epic, man. Yeah. All
All
right, man.
right,
Stay in
that's
touch.
it. Take care.
Cheers,
Yeah,
mate.
we'll do it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we're back. If you get inspired by Rohan's absolutely incredible mindset, growth, and all that jazz, and you're saying, hey, I want to scale my existing business, or you say, hey, this whole business thing sounds awesome, I want to start my own business, we can help you with that. Simply go to maxtorno.com/call, book your free consultation there directly with me and my team. If you want to get into digital consulting, coaching, or online service providing, this is for you, maxtorno.com/call. You just fill out the application, and then you can book your exact date and time where you want to hop on a call with us. So let's make it happen. Thank you so much for watching, for listening, and all that jazz. I appreciate the hell out of you. Thank you, and talk soon.